State of opportunity.
State of opportunity.
I want to be a firefighter.
A ballerina.
I want to be a Batman.
This is a State of Opportunity documentary from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, college material. We begin in a normal office inside the Academic Administration Building at Wayne State University in Detroit. The desk is covered in stacks of paper. A painting behind the desk shows one arm reaching up from the bottom of the frame. From the top, another arm reaches down to take hold.
Can I just have you say your name and title and all that? It's sort of introduce yourself.
Mark Jackson, director of the APEX program, and APEX is an acronym for Academic Pathways to Excellence.
APEX is an alternative admission program at Wayne State. It's a way for students to get into college even if their high school record isn't that great. APEX provides support and, Jackson tells me, a kind of supervision to keep those students on track. Jackson's relatively new to this job. He started this past summer. But he's worked in college advising programs for 35 years at six different schools. And as we talk, he begins to tell me a story from earlier in his career.
I was working with a kid in Chicago, a very similar program like this. Single parent home. That single parent was a drug addict. Somehow, through some high school counselor, he found his way to the university. Marginal kid with marginal skills, came from a high school that was, you know, had all kinds of challenges. But when I met him, he said, I want to do this.
Jackson stops, looks down at his hands. He takes a moment to collect himself, to finish the story.
Happens every time. So, Patrick, he was an empty vessel. He was like, how do I do this? I'm scared to death. Now, you don't get that out of a freshman. But Patrick, somehow we connected, and Patrick said, what do I do? And of course, you know, Mr. Advice here. I'm like, okay, let's see what you got.
Jackson told him to go to the tutor's office, sign up for tutoring for every one of your classes, and go to them, not just when you're struggling, but every week. Then go to an advisor to help you strategically choose your courses so you can maintain a part-time job and still get your degree.
He did it. Patrick became one of the most prolific student leaders that the university has. This is the University of Illinois, Chicago. Patrick sent me a copy of his diploma. It's right over there.
Jackson points over my shoulder to a frame sitting on a bookshelf. Below the diploma is an engraved message. Mark, thanks for the encouragement and mentoring. Mark Jackson has carried this memento with him now for two decades.
But, you know, this is a phenomenal story of a kid that didn't have anything coming to college and very little encouragement. But, you know, wanted better. Patrick has his PhD today.
The American dream is based on the idea that a person who starts out at the bottom can make it to the top. It's a dream that's much harder to accomplish in real life than most people imagine. But for the lucky few who embark on that climb, there's a well-established gateway they have to pass. College. Make it to the other side, and odds are you'll make it to the middle class. Getting to college in the first place is a huge hurdle for many kids, but even for those who manage to get there, earning the degree is a struggle. Less than 40% of people who enroll in college make it to graduation within 6 years, according to federal statistics. Kids who come from low-income families or from families where their parents never went to college face much worse odds. This hour, we're going to hear the stories of students who are trying to beat those odds. And our next story begins in a high school. West Ottawa High School in Holland. Second period, the computer lab.
All right, reminder, minimum 5 sources, and some people's papers are going to be longer than others, so looking for quality, not quantity.
Anne Kirkendall is leading a composition class made up mostly of seniors. She's assigned them to research a career field that interests them, contact people who work in that field, and write a paper about what they learn.
Miss Kirkendall, so I got a call back from my the people that I called, and they said that I could email them. Mm-hmm. Could you look at the questions after I'm done?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ariana Bernal sits at a computer by the window. She's wearing nurse scrubs. Bernal goes off campus in the afternoon for specialized classes in nursing. She'll leave high school with a number of certifications. She works part-time. She's looking for a second job to earn a little extra money for Christmas. And she volunteers.
Oh, that's a lot of work. Plus doing good in my classes. But my mom says that's why I get so sad sometimes, is because I do too much. But I like helping.
Do you feel like you do too much?
Oh, yeah.
Bernal is in the fall of her senior year, in the thick of applying for college. She knows she wants to go into the nursing field, but right now she's not totally sure where she'll be able to afford to go to school.
That's the one thing I hate, is when not knowing what I want to do. Teachers are like, hey, it's okay, you have a couple more years. No, I want to know what I want to do now, and I want to work towards it. I'm definitely organized. I don't like not knowing what the future holds.
She has this self-will, something in her that's, a little fire that started.
Mitch Veldkamp is a counselor at West Ottawa High School. He's been Bernal's counselor since she came here as a freshman.
She just seeks out things. She really does. It's a joy working with her because she's excited about it. She doesn't just sit there in the chair and think, well, what are you going to do for me?
This much is definitely true about Ariana Bernal. Her teachers, her counselor, all the adults who work with her have great things to say about her. She's determined, she's focused, and a rare skill among teenagers, she knows when to ask for help. But Bernal's record on paper doesn't offer the same glowing picture. Anne Kirkendall, Bernal's composition teacher, worked with her on her college applications.
I do sometimes wish that we could, put a gold star on some applications and say, listen, I've seen lots of kids now. This person is going to go far. Believe in them. I believe in them. I wish we could do that.
Instead, all that gets sent to colleges is a few pages with some numbers. Some colleges have started doing personal interviews with some students, and of course each student writes an essay. But still, the two biggest pieces of information colleges use to choose who gets in are the student's GPA and their scores on the SAT or the ACT. Neither of those things show the kinds of strength that Ariana Bernal's teachers see in her. And the reason for that difference, it really comes down to some things that were happening in Bernal's life when she was in her first 2 years of high school.
I think that she is emblematic of students who have problems outside of school, maybe family problems, friend problems, boyfriend problems, whatever the case may be. And they don't leave it at the school door. It follows them inside, and they just have a much harder time being committed to schoolwork.
My sophomore year was awful. I never want to go back to that. I got involved with bad people and all kinds of stuff. Typical, I guess, teen thing. But it wasn't for me. I didn't like it.
And we're talking now about decisions she made when she was 15 or 16 years old. And it doesn't matter on her transcripts that she's improved her GPA since then. Her overall GPA still reflects the choices she made as a high school freshman and a sophomore. And yet, going through that to Bernal, that's the thing that makes her stronger now. Because she also just wasn't going through typical teen stuff. She was battling depression.
I was always sad, and I skipped so many days of school. My mom called me in, and she never understood why. She just wanted me to be happy, and I wanted to be happy. That's what people, I feel like, don't understand with depression. Is they're like, why can't you just be happy? I mean, I do want to be happy. I want to wake up every morning. I want to be happy. I want to get out of bed and be able to do it, but I can't. So sometimes when I feel like I can't get out of bed, I have to literally force myself to get out of bed. So I push myself. And I guess that's maybe why I do too much, because I don't want to not do too much and be stuck at home and feel sad again. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Between the work, the volunteering, the school time, she has lots of reasons to get out of bed. And she has lots of structure to her life. Growing up, that structure wasn't always there. She was born when her mother was only 14. For a while, they didn't have a stable place to live. Her father ended up in prison. Still, she says, while these experiences made some things harder for her, they also made her stronger.
I don't know, I'm happy with the way I grew up, and just my mom's taught me to be different, to be mature, to take responsibility of your own actions. Because I see the kids in my school right now, and they have their, you know, they have everything handed to them, their fancy cars, and they just, they're out there doing drugs and stuff. The kids who you think are not are actually doing that. And then when they go to college, you see them failing, and they're like, why? I did okay in high school. It's because they're not, they don't have their head in the right priorities, and they're not trying as hard.
Ariana Bernal has the right priorities. She does try hard. But her teacher, Ann Kirkendall, knows Bernal won't have the same opportunities as other kids. Kids whose parents went to a big university, kids whose parents have more money. Those kids can screw up and still succeed. Kids like Bernal don't have the same luxury. So they have to be stronger.
It is hard when you see students who are incredibly driven and ambitious, and they really want to go far, and there are going to be some avenues that just aren't open to them because of things that aren't really any fault of their own. They have more to do with where the student is coming from.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll hear from a small-town West Virginia girl who made it to college. She got scholarships, she did well in her first classes, and then...
I'm terrified, but I think it's funny. I think it's humorous, the obstacles that keep coming up. But I'm really afraid.
When college is both the cause of your problems and the solution. Coming up on College Material in about 10 minutes from State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. This is State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, a radio documentary we're calling College Material.
My name's Alyssa Canterbury. I was born and raised in a small town in West Virginia called Madison. And for the past few years, I've been living in Mount Dora / Sorrento, Florida.
How did you end up at Grand Valley State University?
That is a long story.
Alyssa Canterbury is a freshman at GVSU in Allendale. She arrived on campus late this summer. She decided on her major long before she got here. She wants to learn about anthropology. She likes anthropology because she says it will allow her to travel the world and to write. And she says she wants to make something of her name.
My name is Alyssa Canterbury, and where I come from, in Madison, West Virginia, Canterbury is not a very good name. A lot of my family is taken for granted, and a lot of what I did and who I was taken for granted because I carried that name.
This was something she learned at a very young age.
One of my very first memories was me trying to be sorted into my kindergarten class in the gymnasium on the first day of kindergarten, and the teacher looking at her list and saying, I don't want a Canterbury kid in my class, in front of the whole gym.
And it's not a good name. They've always been into violence, drugs, drinking, breaking, entering, all that. She had to live that down.
I called Canterbury's grandma, who's lived in the area around Madison, West Virginia, most her life. Her name is Sharon Martin. Her daughter, Alyssa's mother, is a Martin. Sharon Martin never wanted her granddaughter to be a Canterbury.
I tried to get her mom not to put it on her, but nothing would do her.
So you thought you didn't want Alyssa to have that last name?
No, I did not. I wanted her to be a Martin. I mean, it's not, like I told her, I said, honey, it's just in that area that your name, bad name, you know. I said, you watch television, you see people that's in government that carries the name, you see lawyers, you see doctors. I said, it's not the name, it's just in that area where they know the Canterbury family.
Madison, West Virginia is a tiny town in the hills of southwest West Virginia. The town is called the Gateway to the Coal Fields. And it's home to the annual West Virginia Coal Festival. Canterbury's grandfather, Sharon Martin's husband, worked in a coal mine most of his life.
Can you tell me a bit about where you live?
We live up the holler here in West Virginia. Have you ever been to West Virginia?
I have not.
It's mostly mountains and trees and all that. It's very much country, and I love it. And we live up a holler, and I have hills all around me. and critters all around me. We feed the deers and squirrels and coons and possums and all that. But it's nice. It's quiet.
A good place for a kid to grow up?
Well, considering today's generation and the drug abuse that's all around us, yes. Because everybody watches out after everybody else's family. And most of them that do the drugs, they do it in their own house. You know what I mean? There's not much you can't get the law to come up here and do much with it, but hey, that's the same everywhere else too, I guess.
Yeah, the drugs are real bad there?
Yeah, they're bad everywhere.
It was the drugs, Martin says, that eventually got to Alyssa's parents. And that set off a chain of events that led Alyssa Canterbury out of Madison, West Virginia, first to Florida, and now to Allendale, Michigan.
Is this going to be your first time cooking a turkey by yourself?
Yeah, first time cooking a turkey, but everything else I've cooked already. The stuffing, the mashed potatoes, everything like that. I'm fine. Turkey, my grandma's going to be talking me through it while I make it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It's the day before Thanksgiving. Alyssa Canterbury, in her first year of college, 500 miles from where she grew up, will be spending the holiday break in her dorm room.
So cooking a turkey in the dorm. I don't imagine a lot of students do that.
Probably not.
It's cold out and snowy. The sidewalk has been salted, even though almost no one's here. We're walking to find someplace warm to talk. Many of the buildings on campus are closed, and the dorm room doesn't allow visitors during holiday break. I asked Canterbury about her parents. Her mom was a teenage mother. Her dad, she says, has done prison time. Both struggled with drugs. Around her 16th birthday, she left.
Do you feel like your relationship with them is okay?
I mean, we don't dislike each other, but I don't agree with some of their lifestyle choices, and I think it hurts them sometimes to hear that I'm doing okay without any support from them. So we don't really talk very often, and I don't really visit with them very often, but they do ask them if I'm okay every once in a while, and I try to not ask them if they're okay because I know that they're not.
After she walked out on her parents, Canterbury says she stayed wherever she could. She went to her grandma's for a while. She stayed with friends. She sometimes went to a 24-hour McDonald's for the night. Mostly, she says, she stayed over at her best friend's house. And then her best friend's family moved to Florida. Canterbury had nowhere else to go.
It turns out no one in my family was capable of taking me and supporting me the way that they needed to. They were going to put me in a foster home, but then we got a call from my best friend's dad that said, "We'll take her." And they were like, "Is that legal?" And the judge was like, "Make it legal." So then 7 days later, I moved to Florida.
In Florida, Canterbury did well in school. She's always done well in school. Academics have never been a problem for her. And she had no doubts about where she wanted to go to college. Ever since she was little, she told people she would go to Duke. Then, while she was still in high school, she had a chance to attend a summer program at Duke. She had to raise the money herself to even be able to go.
I went to Duke TIP in summer 2013, and it was a fantastic experience. I met a lot of really enlightening people and great people, but there weren't many people around me who had struggling stories. Everyone had just kind of found their place really easily, and that wasn't me. And I noticed that even though a lot of these people were interesting and were very intelligent and it was easy to talk to them about like academic things, sometimes I would try to say something about my home life and they just wouldn't understand. And so after I left Duke University, it was hard for me to keep up these relationships with them because we just didn't understand each other.
She didn't immediately give up on her dream of going to Duke, but it made her think. Then she was helping a friend research colleges. That friend had family in Michigan, so she stumbled across Grand Valley. She says she fell in love with it. She applied. She got in. All she needed after that was money. She didn't have any. But as an independent minor, she qualified for federal financial aid. And she got a big scholarship. The name of it is the Horatio Alger Scholarship. You're listening to State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, college material. Right now, we're hearing the story of Alyssa Canterbury, a West Virginia girl who this summer loaded up her black Isuzu Rodeo with a Florida license plate, and she drove her way north. She says she loved Grand Valley State University from the start. She got a job working in the office at the campus police department. She developed an obsession with the rock climbing center on campus. But by November, when I met her, she was already running into hurdles.
I'm looking for housing for the 2015-2016 school year.
This problem came up because she signed up to live in a newly built apartment building next year that her scholarship would have covered. Then there was a construction delay for the building. And by the time she found out that basically this building is not going to exist when she needs to move in, other housing options on campus had already filled up. She's 18. She doesn't have a parent to co-sign her lease. She didn't have the income to qualify for a rental on her own.
Worst case scenario, I beg housing on campus to give me a place to live. But I think I might have a couple of options now that I'm trying to get to work out for me.
In the world of higher education, the kind of problem Alyssa Canterbury was facing is something people generally refer to as a barrier. There are whole offices on college campuses full of people who do nothing else but try to help students like Canterbury get through these kinds of barriers. And she told me, in this sense, college for her is both the cause of her problem, because it constantly requires her to put forward money she doesn't have, and it's also the solution to her problem, because as a college student, she has access to lots of resources. A few weeks later, when I met up with her again, she told me she's been approved for a new apartment, but she had no guarantees that there would be space when she needs to move in this April.
Scary. Are you scared, or do you think it's pretty solid?
I'm terrified, but I think it's funny. I think it's humorous, the obstacles that keep coming up. But I'm really afraid.
And this housing situation wasn't the only thing bothering her. There was also a new problem, this time about her status as an independent minor. Even though she's been on her own since moving to Michigan, she told me her guardians wanted to claim her as a dependent on their taxes since she lived with them for part of the year. And if they did, her financial aid could go away. All of this came to a head as most students on campus were starting to cram for finals.
None of these problems are academic problems. Is school good?
Yeah, I don't have any academic problems.
So class is good.
Yeah, I've got A's.
Not only was she doing well, she was enjoying most of her classes. Now, that part of college, the college part of college, was great. Mostly great. There was one thing about her classes that was bothering her. It was her intro to philosophy class. Specifically, it was one guy, a Frenchman, named Albert Camus.
Albert Camus, or something like that. I don't even know if I'm pronouncing it right, but he thinks that life is absurd and that it has no meaning and that humans are in a constant struggle to find meaning in a pointless life and that the only real question is whether or not we should all kill ourselves. And for some reason, I don't even think his premises are correct, because I don't think life is absurd, and I don't think life has no meaning, and I don't think we're all struggling towards pointlessness. I think there's something there, you know?
It seems sort of relevant, because you're going through a pretty absurd situation right now to be continuing on with the belief that life is not absurd.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe it is absurd.
Are you finding yourself agreeing with Camus more, or are you pretty strongly anti?
Well, I think I'm pretty strongly anti Camus, because I think, why would I be doing all this if it was pointless? Like, I have some sort of motivation to continue going through crap to get a college education and get somewhere with my life, and I don't think that comes from like some sort of absurd, non-essential emotion. I think it's towards me finding better for my actual life. And I think that when I'm an adult and when I'm happy and when I don't have to go through this crap anymore, which will probably never happen, but when I'm happy, I will think that my life has meaning. And when it does have meaning, I will laugh when I think of Camus.
You feel angry at them for assigning that to you? Because you worked so hard to get here, and then the first thing they put in front of you is this guy?
No, I'm not angry. I think it's, like, essential, like, not essential, but, like, classical ethics stuff, like, in philosophy. So I understand why they would assign it, but, like, geez, you know? My philosophy teacher's gonna hear this and he's gonna be like, that twerp. You might have to call a second time, because sometimes she doesn't answer on the first time.
The semester is over. Canterbury and I are trying to reach her grandmother. Once again, the campus at GVSU is nearly empty, and Alyssa Canterbury is one of the few students left. She stayed here for Thanksgiving. She'll be here for Christmas, too. Canterbury still talks to her grandma almost every day, but today we're calling from my phone line so we can record. Alyssa's holding on to some good news. But first, she's got to get someone at her grandparents' house to pick up a call from a strange number.
I can just hear her now. Paul, who's calling? I'll have to call her from my phone and tell her what we're doing.
Hello.
Hey.
What are you doing?
I'm trying to get a hold of Mama, but she won't answer the phone. Hey.
Hey.
Can I call you back on a different number?
Yeah, as long as I know it was you. I don't pick up on them numbers. I don't got no credit cards that need adjusted.
Okay, I'll call you right back.
Okay. Hello.
Hi there.
I'm here.
Hi.
How's your day?
It was good. I went shopping for Christmas dinner, and I got stocking stuffers for John.
Oh, okay.
Guess what?
What?
I got straight A's.
Great! Fantastic! Super! Yay!
I know. I got an A minus in philosophy, but at least I got an A.
I've been all right if you had a B, but I'm super proud of you.
I was so happy when I found out.
I'm super proud of you, doll baby. You know you got it in you. Just gotta pull it out there. I love you.
I love you too.
Well, I miss you. There you go. I cried. Did you call that?
Yeah. We got it.
I'm even going crazy today.
Why?
Alyssa Canterbury is now in her second semester at GVSU. She says she got help with her financial aid situation, and she thinks it'll work out. The problem about finding an apartment is still a little uncertain, but one way or another, she's pretty sure she'll either find a temporary place to stay or be able to move into an apartment off campus. In school, she's taking the classes she wants. No philosophy this time. No Albert Camus. I called up Canterbury's grandma, Sharon Martin, a couple weeks ago to catch up.
So how was your holidays?
Oh, I had a good one.
Did you get a chance to talk to Alyssa?
Yeah, I talked to her about 2 days ago. She was working a night shift, going out to work, and she called and let me know she got my Christmas cards and things.
Yeah.
But I haven't got it. Well, we had one, we talked for about an hour and a half, about a week ago. We get to talking, we don't want to hang up. it breaks my heart she's that far away, but she's always going to be that far away because, you know, she's growing up. She's got to have her life. I'm here for her, and she knows that she's got a home to come to anytime she needs it. But you got to let them fly.
Coming up in about 7 minutes, a parable of a good student from a humble background who gets a D on their first exam.
The mindset of that student when they get that D is crushing. It's debilitating in some cases. They are tremendously embarrassed. They don't understand what happened. And they're outraged, but they can't share it because they're embarrassed. They came to the university on a scholarship because of their grade point average.
When everyone in your family's counting on you and you don't know where to turn for help, we'll hear from the professionals who deal with it every day. You're listening to State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. This is State of Opportunity from Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, college material. Can you say your name and your title?
It's Lynn McNamara Blue, and I'm the Vice Provost and Dean of Academic Services and Information Technology.
That is a classic higher education long title. It's good.
It fills up the whole business card.
Lynn Blue is a very important person at Grand Valley State University. She started working at the school in 1968. Now, among other things, she oversees the admissions office and the financial aid office at GVSU, which means she's also partly responsible for something that a lot more people have been paying attention to in higher education lately: graduation rates.
We do a survey called MapWorks with every entering freshman every fall. It's always administered during the third week of the semester. Well, 99% of those kids tell us that they're going to earn a four-year degree, right? So they all come in thinking they're going to get one. And then what happens?
At GVSU, 18% of students will be gone by the next fall. Only 63% will graduate with their degrees within 6 years. And that, by the way, is almost exactly the national average. But that's still not nearly good enough for a lot of people.
Well, the other argument that people will take is they look at the numbers and they say, well, those kids just didn't belong in college. We shouldn't have ever enrolled them. What's your take on that?
Baloney. You know, we're a selective institution. We don't take every Tom, Dick, and Harry on the street. We're looking at their record. And when we judge that kid, is college material, they are. So, you know, if people want to say that, that's fine. It seems to me to be excuse making.
That doesn't mean she believes every student who starts college will finish their degree. Even at the University of Michigan, with the most elite students in the state, 10% of students don't finish their degree in 6 years. And there are specific categories of students who are less likely to finish. They're the students who come in with less to begin with, kids whose parents don't have a lot of money, or whose parents didn't go to college. They graduate at lower rates than the rest of the students.
What you're trying to do is you're trying to close those gaps. That's my goal, is to keep closing that gap as best I can.
Well, you've been here a while. Do you think that gap will ever be closed?
I think not. I really am an optimist at heart. But there are just some subtle differences that until, as a society, we change, those differences are going to be there, no matter what we do.
It's my belief that anybody can overcome anything.
In an office just down the road at GVSU, Marcus Wright is working to prove Lynn Blue wrong.
If we're talking about six-year graduation rate, I believe that with the right tools in place, individuals who are identified as first generation can do just as well as anybody else at an institution.
Wright believes it because he lived it as a student. He believes it because he's in charge of a program that works one-on-one with students to do exactly that. It's a program at GVSU, but the money comes from the federal government as part of the group of programs known as TRIO. When I stopped by his office a few weeks ago, Wright was busy working on the grant application to continue the program for next year. He told me he has a strong case.
We said our graduation rate would be above 60%, our six-year graduation rate. But I believe the last 2 or 3 years has been over 70%. So 7 out of 10 of our students graduate.
That rate beats the national average. Even though the students in Wright's program are from backgrounds which typically mean they would be less likely to finish college.
And typically in any given year, we can only accept anywhere from 20 to 50 students. So we may have up to 200 students who are in the Grand Valley and saying, you know, I would like some assistance, but we can't help them because we've reached capacity for our program.
Wright says these students get referred for other services. But to him, helping these kids is not an unsolvable problem. As Lynn Blue points out, by the time these kids reach the university, they've had a lifetime of different experiences than the kids who grew up in a middle-class home with college-educated parents. But Wright says the first-generation students also have assets, a drive to do better, a strong work ethic. With enough support, Wright believes all of these students can succeed. You're listening to State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. I'm Dustin Dwyer. This hour, a radio documentary we're calling College Material.
Young Elise definitely loved writing.
This is Elise Griffiths talking about herself in the third person. She grew up in Midtown Detroit. She grew up in a family with a lot of brothers and sisters and not a lot of money. She was always interested in learning.
I definitely love writing short stories. I wrote short stories about Pokemon and Digimon and all that. and that was really my big thing. But I really just, it's not even like I love school. I just love learning and learning about a lot of things.
She got herself into everything. She did ballet, orchestra, drama, basketball, and she was a good student. Griffiths was born 7th out of 8 kids. She was the first in her family of any generation to make it to college. She chose Grand Valley State University in Allendale, a place she'd never heard of before going on her college search, a place that was very, very quiet.
My first night, I had a hard time sleeping because my house used to be in front of a freeway and surrounded by 3 hospitals and a police department, so I'm used to tons of noise. And it was so quiet. I couldn't sleep, and I didn't feel homesick, but I was just like, what did I get myself into? Like, who am I kidding? This is not the city.
That was her first night. Just a few days later, her new roommate, a person she'd just met and hoped to be friends with, suddenly moved out.
Now I don't have that person to bond with. You know how people are saying, oh, my roommate was my best friend in college, and, you know, we're still close-knit now, and it kind of made me skeptical because
she was far away from home. This was nothing like where she'd grown up. And now she was alone. But on the other hand, she had a room to herself.
And so I didn't really fret over it too much. I'm like, oh, that sucks. I don't have a roommate. But I was like, I have a room to myself. I can keep the heat up to whatever temp that I want to. And it was great.
But you had always grown up with people in a room, right? You always shared a room?
Yeah, I've always shared a room, though. You had to understand that. So it's like, I actually had my own room. And so I was like, yes, it was so liberating. I was so happy to have my own room, even though I'm just like, oh, that's sad.
So the room situation was great. The other stuff, maybe not as much. She didn't find a circle of friends right away. Other students wanted to go party, which wasn't her thing, or they wanted to go out and do things that cost a bunch of money, which she didn't have. These are the kinds of problems that a lot of college students have, especially those students who are the first in their family to go to college. But what Griffiths did about it is like a roadmap for anyone struggling through higher education.
I actually talked to one of my high school professors about it, and I was just like, I don't feel it here, you know, I don't think this is going to be a good place for me. And she told me just to stick it out and to join clubs and stuff. And so my next semester, my sophomore year, I did fencing, I did rowing, I did rugby. I joined a lot of different organizations.
And she says things got better. She found her niche. The rugby team was a big part of that. And she even raised the money to study abroad for a year in Australia. She still gushes about it, and she wants to go back. As far as her classes, things started fairly easy. She's always been a good student. But her major was biology, which got much harder as she went along. No longer could she just cram for her exams a few days before they happened.
Now I'm just like, I study a week before the exam. I'm in the professor's office hours. I'm in the tutoring center. I'm in all the professor's office hours who have never had me in class who teach the subject. And that is what I love about Grand Valley. Teachers who don't even know who I am, they're like, oh, you needed help. Because I was like, my teacher's not there. I know you teach the same course. And they help you. They are all interested in investing in your future and helping you go far.
It also matters that Griffiths knew when to ask for help. And that's one of the biggest and most important steps on the roadmap through college, just asking for help. Beyond that, Griffiths also took the advice of getting more involved on campus. Students who are isolated have a harder time staying the course when school gets rough. Griffiths graduated in December. Her next move was to enlist in the Marines. She says she eventually wants to go back to school to become a veterinarian and live in Australia. I will travel across the land, searching far and wide. Each Pokemon to understand the power that's inside. Pokemon, gotta catch 'em. So, why is it that kids who are the first in their family to go to college are less likely to graduate than other kids? Money is a big reason. College costs money, and if your parents didn't graduate college, it's less likely that they have it. Academics might be another reason. Kids from low-income families on average go to schools with lower academic records, and they score lower on standardized tests. But what if you get a scholarship to cover the money, and you're a good student in high school? That still may not be enough. Mark Jackson has worked in college academic advising for 35 years. He now directs a program at Wayne State University called APEX. He told me a story about what he's seen in his career and why first-generation college students often struggle compared to other students.
At the point at which a student graduates from high school, a guess is made about how much they know how to do. Unfortunately, there are disparities, and the disparities in many cases, stem from economic disparity and opportunities based on that. So, student one, what we would affectionately call the brainiac, they were getting A's all throughout their entire K through 12 career, and their parents hired tutors to make sure that they get into the good college and all that kind of stuff. And they're very responsible. They had a regimen when they got home from school every day, and their homework had to be checked and all that kind of stuff. So that student hits the ground running. They know exactly what to do. They walk in with a routine, okay? And they are able to resist the distractions that any university offers, the free movies, the dating, the lack of parents, the no curfew, all that. They were able to resist that. Student B comes along. Got A's in high school too, but a different high school. Different education. Their parents didn't go to college, so they didn't get the same level of scrutiny, advice, probably got the same level of encouragement. But again, there's only so much I can help you with, okay? So when I send you off to college, I'm hoping and praying that those folks can help you, all right? So now, I'm student B again. I've got a 3.6. I've been successful doing the stuff I used to do in high school, so I'm going to try that in college. Unfortunately, that did not mean the same level of preparation. It didn't mean the same level of structure. I did not come home from school every day and study. So they go take the exam, and they get a D. The mindset of that student when they get that D is crushing. It's debilitating in some cases. They are tremendously embarrassed. They don't understand what happened. And they're outraged, but they can't share it because they're embarrassed. They came to the university on a scholarship because of their grade point average. And suddenly they've let all these people down who were cheering for them. They may have been the first student in their family to go to college. So there's a very private moment. They don't talk to the instructor about it because they're embarrassed. And so they try harder. Ah, but you see, that was 25% of my grade right there. So I go into exam number two, the midterm. I'm going to try to study harder, whatever that means. I get a C. So now we're averaging a C and a D. Let's call it a C minus and be generous. But 50% of my opportunity, 50% of my points are gone. I no longer can get an A in that class. So you can see the downward trend and the psychological effect that's going on. I no longer like college, and I dare not, and this is what I hear students tell me, I dare not reveal that I'm not doing well. That same student who could have been a good student, if given guidance, could have achieved. This is what results in a low graduation rate.
That was the voice of Mark Jackson, director of the APEX program at Wayne State University in Detroit, and a 35-year veteran of academic advising in higher education.
When I first got here, I was scared.
Jasadia Doherty grew up in Lansing. 3 years ago, she moved into a dorm room at Wayne State University as part of the program Mark Jackson now oversees. And she was terrified.
Like, I remember some nights I just couldn't go to sleep. I'd be like, I'm so scared. Like, I think I want to go home. And
scared of what?
Just scared of, like, starting classes and actually having to do, I guess, having, like, real responsibilities and this isn't high school anymore. Like, so many people say that. Like, it's not like high school when you go to college. And so that scares you, too. You're like, okay. So
Doherty was admitted to Wayne State, even though her high school GPA wasn't good enough to get in. She says she had a 2.7. Usually, you need a 2.8 to get in. In her family, no one had gone to college. She didn't even think about college until her junior year of high school. She started taking school more seriously then, and she improved her grades in the last 2 years, but not enough to make up for the bad grades in her freshman and sophomore years of high school. APEX offers conditional acceptance for students like Doherty to Wayne State. Students have to accept additional help and additional supervision. And during the summer, APEX students get free housing. To Doherty, this was someone investing in her. And that came with pressure, too.
So when I'm taking people's money and time, and that's what APEX did, I'm like, I have to prove something. And so that was scary. It was scary that my family was banking on me. I'm like, oh my gosh, if I don't get in with the summer program, I really don't know where I'm going to go.
So she worked at it. She took the help offered to her by the APEX program. She took it even as she watched many of her fellow students get upset at the requirements of the program, the embarrassing checkups from advisors who would stop by her class just to make sure she was there and make sure she was keeping up with her work. She said many of the students she started with dropped out of APEX. She stuck with it because, for her, college was the only way out of the way she'd been living her whole life.
And for me, it was kind of like, I'm unhappy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like this lifestyle that we're living. And so it's kind of like, when people ask me, why did you go to college? It's kind of because of my family. Like, when I really feel like giving up, I think about my family and how I don't want it to be like that.
Like a struggle every day, like not having money for food, like working long hours and not seeing much come of it.
Because I feel that money really does get to a lot of people. Like, I feel like it just controls a lot of situations, and money has definitely been a thing for my family. It's our meals, it's our lifestyle that nobody has ever stepped up and been like, I'm gonna support us, you know what I mean? And so for me, that's what it is.
She's going to be the one who steps up. She's going to make it out. Doherty has a little more than a year to go before graduation. Her college GPA is a lot better than her high school GPA. And when she's done, she says she wants to get her master's. The statistics support Doherty's thinking. College may not be the only way out of a life of poverty, but it increases your chances by a whole lot, if you can get through it. You've been listening to College Material from State of Opportunity on Michigan Radio. Tamar Charney is executive producer of State of Opportunity. Vincent Duffy is our news director. Sarah Hewlett edited this documentary. The State of Opportunity team is Sarah Alvarez, Jennifer Guerra, Brittany Bartoviak, and I'm Dustin Dwyer.
Support for State of Opportunity comes from the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, a partner with communities where children come first.